All right, everyone, welcome to another episode of Sloppy Spoilers here for our March episode. We got a lot to talk about here. Of course, it's me, Allie, and Bex. How you guys doing?
Yeah, good, thank you.
Good, thanks.
Good, good. Just want to mention a few trailers and newsy things. First thing, I know neither of you care, so I won't talk too much about it, but the Fantastic Beasts trailer came out finally, and I'm super excited. I'm that nerd who loves Harry Potter, and this is, I think, going to be cool, even cooler than Harry Potter. So to see, what is his name? Jude Law against Johnny Depp with magic, that's going to be pretty cool. So
that's quite an impressive lineup.
Right? So I'm excited. But so if you're into that sort of thing, go check out the trailer and you'll be excited too. But on to things we all love. Krypton comes out next week. Yay. How are you guys feeling about that? Are we still excited or has that waned?
I still want to see it. Yeah. I still want to see it. It's something that's got such good potential. And even though I'm a bit kind of like about having a time travel-y element, we just have to see how they'll work it. They've not really given us that much information yet on what's going to be in it.
Yeah.
I'm super excited. That Brainiac trailer was really cool.
Yeah, I was very excited that it was Brainiac. Like, it's not going to be some B-level character, you know, villain. It's one of the biggest Superman villains. And it just makes sense because we know that he does the City of Kandor and all that. So timeline wise it makes sense, and I mean he looks pretty sick, right?
Yeah, I was pretty impressed with the way that that he looked in that trailer. But the whole show, like every trailer pretty much looks like it's going to be pretty like good quality.
Yeah, the production values look pretty high as well, and I think I'm quite excited to have a proper Brainiac after I almost thought we were going to get a Brainiac type thing in The Flash and it turned out to be the Thinker. So if they actually go and make a proper, almost planet-sized Brainiac type thing, that would be pretty awesome.
Right. That's what I'm hoping for. It has this production quality reminds me of Battlestar Galactica, which I think is one of the best production qualities that sci-fi has done. And this is up there. Like, this is movie quality. This, honestly, I think, and I don't hate on Justice League, but I think this even looked better than Steppenwolf did. Like, this is pretty decent graphics. Now, maybe we won't see Brainiac that much. Like, maybe they put all the money into it up front for the trailers and for a few scenes, and then, we'll just see his influence. It's just smart TV money. But hopefully we'll see a lot of him. Either way, he looks pretty cool. I'm excited for that. And also, we've been seeing a lot of Shazam set photos, which I'm not a fan of set photos because they always look terrible, at least to an extent. But how are you guys feeling about how it looks, about the costume and all that? We'll start with you, Allie.
The first picture that came out, actually, I saw because you had tweeted it, it was low quality and, probably from a distance and zoomed in or something. So it looked even worse. And I was like, oh my goodness, what is going on? But then you have to remember, like you said, set photos don't usually look good. I mean, they're not movie quality. So, but then the high res pictures that came out looked much, much better, especially the suit. It looked so much better. So I was happy with those ones. I like the suit after seeing the high resolution pictures.
Yeah. Definitely. Bex?
Yeah, I was quite surprised with how cartoony they had gone with it, because we'd seen them make every DC character seems like they're just turning the saturation down. The more time goes on, the more they're turning the saturation down on all these images. And then you see, even on the lowers of ones of him, that this like primary colors, that's kind of really out there and bold, which is quite an unusual choice with the way things have been going recently. And I think because Shazam as a character was someone who was influenced by Superman and looked up to Superman, that it's almost slightly strange that he's more sort of Superman looking just by the kind of set of colors he's got going and the optimism he seems to have than our current Superman.
Yeah.
So it's going to be an interesting one. I think it's going to be quite different to a lot of the other DC stuff going on, just based on the color palette. It has to be.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's what they said.
That it's... I guess that's what the director had said. It's definitely going to be the most lighthearted of the DC films, which makes sense for the character.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, because... Yeah. It's definitely arguable that Man of Steel is the badass version of Superman. Like, he's got a really cool looking suit, not like the Christopher Reeves version, which was cool for its time. And you know, he snaps Zod's neck in the first movie. Like, he's pretty tough. And then he dies.
I'm not a huge fan of that interpretation as the main version we're running with, because it takes away part of the thing I like about Superman. Is the fact that he is sort of pretending when he's being Superman. That's a mask he puts on. And he's pretending when he's being Clark as well. He's always having to kind of filter bits of his personality. And his secret identity isn't just himself. It's him concealing his abilities and who he is. And Superman was such a beacon. He was supposed to be this, you know, the poster boy of hope for the city. And he was colorful for a reason. He's one of the characters that it made sense how colorful he was. So it's, I'm not so sure about with his, I mean, with Batman, it makes sense, you know, like he's supposed to be dark. He's supposed to look like that. But I mean, I can see why they've done things to make people sort of all fit together in a group for Justice League. But I would have liked a little bit more color on Superman, I think.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I think it can work for Superman, but I don't think dark Billy Batson works. So that's why I'm glad that they're kind of leaning into, you know, it's kind of like when Logan said, what do you expect? We wear yellow spandex. Like, yes, that's what we want to see. So I'm excited that they're like leaning in like, yeah, this is Shazam. And it's the cool hooded outfit, kind of like, kind of Young Justice-y looking.
Yeah, and it makes sense for him because he's a kid. He's designed his suit to emulate his heroes, and he comes from that mentality. So it shouldn't look the same as all the other guys. So that works. And I'm glad they're going to keep it more lighthearted, and they aren't going to try and give him a super tragic backstory and make him like an X-23 style
right.
kind of thing. Like, because they could have done that. That's the other thing they could have done, is they could have tried to, you know, make him someone who was much more like, you know, emo Spider-Man in Spider-Man 3 or something.
Yeah, we don't want emo Spider-Man 3. We don't want anything like that ever again.
No, that film only, the only value to that entire film was that it has that Bruce Campbell, Monty Python style cameo that looked like a Fawlty Towers scene in it. Tiny bit where he's a waiter. That's the only thing that made me feel like I'd got anything for my money.
Yeah, yeah. That movie's bad. Just a side note, that movie was so bad. That was back when they did midnight showings. We went and saw it at midnight, and then we all sat in the parking lot. You know, it's probably 2:30, 3 o'clock by the time the movie gets out. Sat in the parking lot for like 2 hours in the car, just cracking jokes on how terrible the movie was. And we all had work the next day, so like that's how bad it was. We were like, we don't care about sleep. We need to trash this movie. But anyway, so yeah, Shazam, I'm optimistic for. I'm optimistic for everything DC at least. But yeah, I like where they're going with the Shazam. And yeah, that first set photo, it did look terrible. But if you've ever been on a set before and then you see the final product, you're like, oh, yeah, the movie magic is not on set. It's not there.
Yeah. Did you see the little video that someone had shared?
With the bus, like he's like outside. Yeah, yeah, that was.
Yeah.
He kind of had like his posture was like, it was like cartoon superhero posture. It was pretty funny.
Yeah, I thought it was funny. I wish I had sound.
Which but... is cool. I'm hoping that they kind of comment back on that in a similar way to when we had things with Captain America in the Marvel films where they kind of like, they show him the suit and he's kind of like, what, seriously? You know, we're going for Star Spangled. And they can easily kind of comment on that kind of thing and make it a bit of referential fun for Shazam, where it's kind of like, who designed your suit, a 10-year-old? It kind of writes itself because it's a very lovable, lighthearted character. So this gives me some more hope for DC that they're actually willing to break out of the mold of doom that they have been working in recently.
Well,
they tried that with Justice League and it didn't work. But I think it's more appropriate for Shazam, though, not for Justice League.
Well, it's too much of a mix when you look at that, because Justice League is part too much part of those other dark movies. It has to be tonally a bit more consistent. This can stand on its own a lot more.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Justice League, as much as I love the movie, Justice League, the tone reminds me of like Thor Ragnarok and Guardians, in that it's two totally separate tones at once. Like, there's dark and brooding and terrible, and then slapstick at points. It wasn't as slapstick. I think most of the Justice League humor was pretty organic. Like, I think we talked, like, my favorite part is when Superman, like, in speed time, like, looks at Barry. Like, that's the funniest. Like, every time I see it, the theater cracks up laughing. And it's not even a joke. It's, you know, it's just a funny scene. I definitely agree. They just need to make a decision versus trying to do both. You know, they need to make a decision early on and not change horses in the middle of the stream.
We know they can do it because the CW Flash series is brilliantly mixes the dramery bits with a comedy overtone that ties it together without it feeling choppy. So we know DC can do that. It'd be awesome to see that translated to the big screen.
Yes, absolutely. And even if you look at the DC animated, you know, they've been doing it for almost 30 years, doing it right, mixing, you know, there's funny parts, there's deep and dark parts. So it definitely can be both. Like, I don't want it... nothing against Marvel, but I don't want it to be like Marvel where there's one tone and theme for everything. Like, each movie can have its own theme, as it should. Like, we can have hopeful movies, we can have hilarious movies, we can have dark and broody movies. You know, I think there's an audience for it all. So, now on that point, Snyder Cut, do you guys care?
I'm not sure if I care.
But yeah, I would like to see it. Like, I would even been cool with what's the word? I would have been super cool with unfinished scenes, because I've seen them have deleted scenes before that aren't finalized, which is cool. Like, I know you guys don't want to spend the money to make a second movie, but hey, just show us all the unedited stuff. Like, that's cool enough for me.
I think that's all people want to see. Like, I mean, even if they did spend some money to try to finish up some stuff, they would make it back, because I think there's plenty of people who would be willing to pay to see it. Like, in a DVD format or something, or digital.
With something like Suicide Squad, they could have just put out two separate movies with the amount of footage they have, and it would have satisfied multiple audiences rather than mashing it together into one that didn't make anybody particularly happy. Yeah. Unless they were just a fan of the Harley Quinn bending over scene. And I think that there's definitely an audience for other versions of things, not necessarily just longer and longer cuts of the same thing, but a slightly different vision. I mean, if you want to get the entire internet talking about something, put out two different films with two different endings, and that would work.
Yeah. And, I mean, it's obvious that there's enough footage to release, because there's a ton of stuff that was not in there that was in the trailers. And then plus the stuff that got leaked that was not completely finished, and stuff that's been confirmed that was cut. So it's a lot. I mean, it would pretty much be a completely different movie for the most part if they decided to release it in some way.
Yeah. But yeah, it's, I hope we see those scenes. And I'm not like a do or die, like, I'm never going to buy it. I'm going to buy Justice League eventually. But if there was the extra scenes, I would have bought it by now.
Exactly. And then the Superman stuff that they released, it's like not even included in the movie. It's just like a special, like a deleted scene or whatever, which I thought it was funny how they're trying to market to buy the digital or the DVD, Blu-ray, whatever, by using a Superman scenes that they took out because they didn't want anything of Snyder to do with it. And that's what they're using to try to get people to buy it. Because obviously people are like, I don't want to buy it. A lot of people, not everybody.
Yeah.
But a lot of people are like, I don't want to buy it because they sold a different movie during the marketing and then we got something.
Exactly. Exactly.
You know, totally different in theaters. And so people are mad and that's what they're trying to use to sell it, which I think is funny.
Yeah,
ironic.
Most of the scenes from the early trailers are not in the movie, like which is really funny.
Even the latest, even like the trailers right before the movie came out, there's scenes that were not in the movie.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was like, yeah, I just get mad when I talk about it. So,
well, here to keep you not mad, we'll transition. Last thing I'll talk about before we jump into our normal type reviews, Legion season 2. Now Bex, I know me and you loved it. Now Allie, you haven't seen Legion yet, right?
No, but I still want to.
Okay. Yeah.
I still want to though.
And it's short. I think the first season is only 8 episodes. Like it's not like a crazy 22 or.
Yeah.
So, and it's really, really worth it as well. It's beautifully directed, makes lots of really bold choices you wouldn't expect, lulls you into a false sense of security and then kind of spins off in a different direction. It's exceedingly well put together and that has some beautiful production values as well and some really interesting choices with the way they film stuff.
I agree. And every time you think you have it figured out, you don't. And it's very intentional. Like, and it makes sense. Mm-hmm. It's not just like M. Night Shyamalan where we're making twists for no reason. Like it's the character is going through the twist with you. So it's pretty cool. I love it. And the trailer has me so excited because it looks even, I'm going to go ahead and use the word zany. It's like as zany as the first one, which is, it's ridiculous in the best possible way. So, that's the kind of, Legion is one of the reasons why I'm sad Fox will get bought out by somebody because like they're finally figuring out their lane is in the other stuff. Like they're like Nintendo for me. They're not Xbox or PlayStation. They're Nintendo. Like, and let's see the crazy stuff.
Right.
Like the Deadpools, the Logans, the Legions. I'm excited for this type of stuff. So, and
I definitely have to watch it.
The cast is great.
There's so much talent in Legion. It's just ridiculous because none of those are easy roles to play.
Not at all. Not at all. And there's a great, I mean, I won't spoil it for Allie, but there's like a great tie-in because, you know, it. When you first see it, you're like, they're not going to tie this back into X-Men. But, you know, there's a perfectly well-done tie-in. So, yeah, I can't, like, it's, I'm probably going to rewatch it. I only have a couple of weeks, but I'll probably try to rewatch it before it comes out. Yeah, because I'm just that's might be my favorite comic book show that's on right now, or at least the one I'm most excited about.
Yeah, it's the one furthest removed from the comics of its origin as well, but it somehow manages to kind of keep little nods and little tie-ins, just little bits and pieces that still keep it with a comic book feel, despite the fact it bears next to no resemblance to Legion in the X-Men comics at all.
Yeah. I'll go ahead and disagree and say that's Lucifer because Lucifer has nothing to do with his comics besides his name and
yeah.
Kind of
I grant you that.
Half that's... a personality. Besides that, yeah, it's really removed. It's really removed. But it works. Like, it still works.
Oh, yeah. I love it. It's one of my favorite TV shows ever, I think I would say.
Yeah, that's high praise.
Wow. Well, I guess now's a good time to watch the whole season since the second season is coming out soon. That way it can be. Because I watched the trailer that you sent, but I didn't watch it till the very end. I was afraid that if I don't know, I didn't want something to be.
I don't think it spoils anything.
Okay. Besides, so I wasn't sure.
Oh, I mean, they say the villain's name, but you kind of figure that out like early on.
Okay. Well, yeah, that's fine.
Besides that, though, yeah, it's. I don't think it gave anything away because it's so confusing. Like even watching it, having seen the first season, I'm like, oh man, this is gonna be wild.
Yeah.
Well, they don't want to tell us anything. They just want to tease some things, which just gonna remind us how awesome the first season is. I think that's all they're trying to do with that trailer. There's just images in there, and I'm like, so who on earth is that going to be? Where on earth is this going to be? And you're not supposed to be able to navigate that trailer. It's and I prefer trailers like that, to be honest. It just reminds me that something is awesome and that there's new ideas in it without spoiling all of those twists and turns that I want to enjoy as it goes along.
Yeah. And I forgot to mention Aubrey Plaza. I don't know if she's in season two. I really hope she is, because she is phenomenal. Like, I love her in general, but like, I didn't know how great of an actress she was. Like, she killed it as her character.
A main character, yes.
I actually don't even remember what they call her. Dang, I don't know. I don't remember like what name she had. Anyway, but yeah, she kills it. All right. Well, here, let's go on to the biggest thing that's on right now. Black Panther. And Allie, you weren't able to stick around for our review last time, so I want to hear your thoughts on Black Panther.
Okay, yes. I can say this is the first Marvel movie that I can say I loved.
Wow.
I like Marvel movies, but I've never really been able to say that I love a Marvel movie. And I was kind of expecting to be able to say that before the movie came out, because I was really looking forward to it. But I did. I loved it. It's probably the first Marvel movie that I would say that I would pay to see in theaters more than once. Would like to buy. I do have some Marvel movies, but it's not like I don't usually leave the theater saying like I can't wait to see it again, or I can't wait to buy it, or, you know, I like them. I enjoy them, but they don't really stick with me quite as much. And this movie, yeah, it was a first of many things for me within the Marvel universe. And so I was very pleasantly surprised. Yeah, definitely. And I remember when we had talked about it before it came out, I think it was, we were talking about a trailer, I think. And I had mentioned that Michael B. Jordan, I like him as an actor, but I wasn't completely sold on him playing like a villain in the trailers. And he definitely proved me wrong in the movie. I thought,
yeah, he's phenomenal.
Yeah, some of his line delivery, I was like, just a couple. It was just being nitpicky. But overall, I thought he was very menacing for a villain. Like, he's crazy.
Yeah.
And I had never felt an emotional connection to a Marvel villain.
Right.
And he brought that for me. Like, I've never teared up during a Marvel movie. I teared up a couple times during this movie. And surprisingly, one of those times was during one of his moments, which is probably obvious, the end. And I was like, wow,
me up too.
I was like, oh my gosh, what's happening right now? I was surprised. It was great. I liked it a lot.
I'm glad you enjoyed it. That's pretty much the consensus. I mean, it's cracked $1 billion, dollars, which I'm so happy that it did. Not just because I wanted to.
Less than a month.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, less than a month. I was like, I'm not surprised, but at the same time, I was like, wow, that's crazy.
Yeah, it's the second highest grossing Marvel movie besides Avengers. And, you know, there's still time. Like, it could beat Avengers. So it's massive.
Right.
I wanted to mention a few things on it. Yeah, that ending was great. Oh, one of my friends made a funny comment, because a few people had mentioned Michael B. Jordan's acting. Like, and not that it was bad, but just like you said, everyone said some lines. And someone else said, I think he just acted like more than everyone else did. Like he's kind of separate because he's really in this role, and everyone was a little bit less acting than him. Not that they were bad, and I don't want to say he's overacting, but he was just like really into it. So some of the lines, yeah, do feel maybe a little bit much. But
I think it kind of works reasonably okay, because his character is in some ways trying to make a point, trying to portray a persona, trying to put on a kind of front.
That's a great point.
Yeah, that's very true. Mm-hmm.
So I think that's why it didn't stand out for me, as I saw it more as, here's a character who's got, you know, some fake swag kind of thing going on that they're trying to portray, and that is making him a bit, you know, dramatic in the way he's delivering his lines, because he thinks he's delivering righteous speeches, so he's behaving that way.
Yep, sure. That's very true. And like I said, it was only maybe like two times, and I was just being nitpicky about it. It wasn't even something that ruined anything for me. And The scene where I guess this was like his first scene pretty much, when he's in the museum or whatever it is, and he, you know, mm-hmm. he's talking to the woman there, and that's when I first saw, I was like, wow, he's going to be a menacing villain. When he's telling her, like, you know, how do you think your ancestors got these and stuff like that? I was like, oh, dang, he's going to be crazy. And I really liked his narrative that they gave him, because it was historical and it was deep. And that's usually not a thing that they have really for Marvel villains, in my opinion. And so I was happy that they did that with him, even down to the end.
Yeah.
You know? I liked that for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, he became instantly my number. Like, I'm hesitant to say it. I want to see it one more time. I saw it twice in theaters. I want to see it once more. But he mm-hmm. instantly became, like, the number one Marvel villain for me. Like, if not one, he's, like, top three. So
yeah, I agree.
I'm excited for him. I'm sad they killed him. I hope there's some way they bring him back. Or no. He didn't really die or something.
But his death was like, I don't know if
it was too poignant.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
No, I know what you mean. I just want it. I'm selfish. I mean,
no, I know. I like just to see him again.
I think he has the talent to be the next, like that character would have had the ability to be the next Loki, like to be the villain that lingers and that kind of maybe helps sometimes, but has his own agenda. You know, for the next few years, popping in out of movies, I think he definitely had that ability as an actor. So,
I wonder if that would have lessened him slightly, though, because you look at the difference of Loki in the first. Because I recently rewatched all the Thor films, so I could watch Ragnarok, and the difference between Loki in each film and Avengers and Ragnarok, they change the way they have him act and behave so much that I hadn't kind of realized at the time, but when you watch them back to back, you're like, he's completely different in Avengers for like 90% of the film compared to how he is in Thor, and then in Ragnarok it's just completely changed again and is practically sort of somewhere between comic relief and the only voice of sanity in the film.
You know, I personally am not a fan of Loki in the slightest. But I feel like maybe in hindsight, when people are doing like the rewatches back to back, they're like, wait a minute, well, you know, something changed with this guy. And I'm like, yeah, I saw this years ago. But yeah, I don't even think Loki's good enough of a character to be in that many movies. But I mean, if we are going to have
someone. I'm slightly
someone,
blinded by love.
And that's fair.
We'll call it love. It might be another similar word.
That's totally fair. Yeah.
Yeah, I did start to spot the way that they've handled Loki in the films is way less consistent than you realize if you see them years apart, which I think is a shame. So maybe just having, a character like Killmonger just for the one film.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's going to maintain his integrity.
Sure, sure. Yeah, I mean, it's best they're not going to bring him back, and it's probably for the best. I'm just selfish. But yeah, phenomenal movie. I will be buying it when it comes out. And I've downloaded the album and the score, which are both great. So, yeah, there's nothing about this movie that I don't like. And I think one of the things I love most was just seeing how happy it made people. So that was cool.
Yeah, it's had a big effect, definitely.
But yeah. Anything else you want to mention, Allie, since you weren't around when we totally went into it?
One more thing. Well, there was one thing I was surprised by, with his dad, with T'Chaka. I was surprised that he left him. I was wondering if they were going to show what happened when he, we found out, that it was his brother, and stuff. In the beginning, T'Chaka's brother, I was wondering if they were going to go back and show what really happened during that encounter. And it shocked me that not like in a bad way, I was just wasn't expecting it, that he left his brother's son there, which of course was Eric Killmonger. But I was like, wow.
Yeah.
That was pretty dark.
It was super dark.
Yeah.
And there's
not in a bad way. not in a bad way. It's just sometimes I think Marvel movies need that a little bit. But, and I thought that compared to a lot of other Marvel movies, the humor was more appropriate in this one for sure. Because for a lot of Marvel movies, the humor can take me out and just like, you know, kind of I'll be checked out after a while. And I was happy that that didn't happen for this movie.
It's weird kind of parallels with Ragnarok there, because Ragnarok, the humor, they did the same joke like 50 times, which is the I'm going to do something cool, oh no, I fell over joke. and they did that a million times. But they also had a similar things where you've got, obviously, you know, a father figure who abandons people because obviously he picked up Loki as an orphan, was using him slightly as a bargaining tool. And then they invented, you know, that, oh, there's a sister and I abandoned her and locked her away because I didn't like her anymore. So they definitely seem to have a, you know, the twist is that the father figures that you think are so wise and great have a dark past, seems to be going on a little bit in Marvel.
Yeah.
So it's the Guardians of the Galaxy as well. Hey, it's a planet. Evil.
Yeah, it's true. I get it's just the approach was very different. So in Black Panther, they didn't try to make a joke out of it or, you know.
It was much more subtle.
Yeah, definitely.
Much more sensitively handled than it was in the other ones.
And it was all very like real laughs in Black Panther. Like the brother-sister jokes. Like, you know, that totally makes sense. And it, you know, especially like when she like pulls the camera out because she knows he's about to fall over. Like, it's all hilarious.
Yeah.
And I love they did a great job paralleling both of the sons with their fathers. And I don't know. I thought it was really, they really set it up well. Like when you watch it the second time, you're like, man, they set this up beautifully and perfectly. Like, they really thought this out. They didn't just throw this all together. It was very purposely done. And it feels like they gave Ryan Coogler a lot of leeway and a lot of power and creative power. So, and it turned out really well. You know, this really
stands. It felt really cohesive, definitely.
Yeah, and it stands as a really standalone movie. It's part of the MCU, but it's totally separate at the same time. Like, you can watch this not having seen any other movie and it'll make sense to you. So.
Yes, that was another thing I liked about it. I'm glad you mentioned that. I was glad that there wasn't so many, well, I didn't expect there to be, but I'm glad that there wasn't Iron Man and we didn't have all these characters that we have in most of the Marvel movies. So we see over and over and over again. And, well, I know it was his origin movie, so I didn't expect to, but I was just, it was nice to just have the movie be about him and that's it. Not all these other characters and, you know, Black Widow's in every movie and, you know, I'm glad that they didn't try something like that, you know. God. I was happy about that because it kind of gets a little stale after a while with every movie.
I completely agree. It was very fresh.
There was no need for cameos and all that stuff.
One thing that really surprised me, in the first time I saw it at the Thursday night showing, when the after credit scene came with Bucky, like, these girls lost their mind when they saw Bucky on screen. I didn't know people liked Bucky that much. But it totally, like, threw me for a loop. So funny. I was like, oh, okay, I guess that's how we all love Bucky.
It's the classic story of good boy turns bad, turns evil, turns good again. I mean, you know, what's not to relate to?
good point. But all right, we'll wrap that up on Black Panther here. We'll go on to the next, probably biggest, latest thing out. Jessica Jones just came out. Were you guys able to catch the first episode of that?
Yep. Yeah. I watched that one today.
All right. So, first of all, how are you guys on the first season? Do you like it?
I haven't watched it. And to be honest, when I watched this first episode of the second season, I was watching it with the mindset of, does this make me want to watch the first season?
And did it?
And to be honest, not really. I mean, there were a couple things that I was like, oh, that's something that I would kind of like to know a little bit more about. But to be honest, it was it didn't do that much for me.
Okay.
That's totally fair.
Before it wasn't bad. It just I don't know.
I'm not a fan of season one at all. But okay. Bex, how did you watch season one?
I watched a bit of season one and it kind of dropped off the list. So I came back into this. I watched the quick, you know, sort of trailery roundup bit and then watched this one. And it's a weird one because I really like some aspects of it, but it's very much more of an emotional drama that has superhero elements rather than a true genre series. So it may be doing what it's trying to do really well, but it's not necessarily something that particularly kind of grabs my interest and pulls me in. It's a weird one. I really did enjoy parts of it, but then it would kind of divulge off into other things, and I was like, "This, I'm not interested in this." But I almost wanted to kind of fast forward bits of it.
Yeah, I felt the same way watching the first episode of the second season, and I was like, "Well, maybe I don't have a fair opinion because I haven't seen the first season."
It's a lot. But of the
at
same.
The same time, I was like, "Well." I don't know. I was thinking that if this first season was really good, then the first episode of the second season would make me want to go watch it in some way, yeah. You know, and it didn't really get that. Yeah. I didn't have that response to it.
It's got David Tennant in it and a lot of other acting talent, and I'm still not entirely fussed to go back and watch the rest of it. And David Tennant is a crazy charismatic actor. And I almost just want to watch... like if someone on YouTube has done the abbreviated abridged episodes or something that I would watch, but I'm just not sure I want to commit the time to something that's got quite a slower pace as it's got. And I found a similar thing with things, you know, the other series, things, even Daredevil, although Daredevil was really good in some ways, some of the personal drama bits I just wasn't quite as interested in. They were just slightly too slow and too heavy for me, and it made it feel like it took a bit of effort to get through everything.
Yeah. That honestly, personal stuff is my big gripe with most shows, especially genre shows. Like, I don't care about Felicity and Oliver in Arrow, or even worse, Felicity's family. I
stopped watching Arrow. Pretty much because of that.
Yeah. I don't care about that. I want to see people get shot with arrows. That's why I watch a show called Arrow.
Or avoid getting shot with arrows, otherwise you'd run out of characters quite quick. But either way, some kind of
I want to see arrows flying arrow. Around.
Yeah.
I will say I rather like this episode or this season a little bit more. Well, at least when I watched the first episode, I liked it more than the first season. My big gripe with the first season, and I know this is like the total man answer, it's not a show for me. The first season, at least, it focuses a lot on her being assaulted, and which is, you know, a lot of people totally related to that. You know, and talking with people online, I found a lot of people who like they really touched a piece at home for them, and I didn't get it. I was just like, okay, whatever. And then this season, and this is, again, me being selfish, like her dealing with the loss of her family and the ashes, like that mess, like it struck a super chord at home. And I'm like, man, okay. Like, so this is, it is a, it's probably a really good, like, emotional drama, kind of, and not as emotional as, like, a This Is Us, but, you know, like that type of feel. Because it totally hit me in the feels with all the family stuff and the parent stuff. But with that said, you know, I don't want to feel like that. That's why I don't watch This Is Us.
I love that show. It's like my favorite show right now.
I know. Every girl I know, almost every of them, is like their favorite show.
It is.
You very much have to be in the right mood to watch these kind of shows.
I completely agree. Like Logan does that to me too, because the father stuff, and so like I watched that and I had to be in the right mood for it, and I watched that and it made me super sad all over. So, yeah, but I mean, it's probably good writing, you know, if you're in for the emotional stuff. With that said, I watched, I don't know, I've probably seen half the season. I'll kind of watch an episode here and there, and it's okay. There's no big villain yet, and it's kind of weird. But it's a lot of just emotional stuff that she deals with. And yeah. I think they sold a lot on her character being like the broody bitch, and like proud of that. So,
right.
I mean, you know, it's a cool character.
Yeah, I think I need to go into it watching it not as a genre show, watching it as something else that just has a few elements from that, and that might make a difference, I guess. I think I just expected something a bit different from it was when I first tried to watch the first season.
Yeah, yeah. I completely agree. It's not the worst Netflix show, though. That is totally held by Iron Fist. That is the worst Netflix Marvel show.
Yeah, I haven't even thought about watching that show. Just because of the bad feedback you got, I was like, yeah, I don't think it's probably not going to be worth my time. I did like the first season of Luke Cage, and I liked the first season of Daredevil. Season two of Daredevil, for me, just started getting way too... It was just too much going on.
Yeah.
And I was like, I finished it, but I was like, nah, they kind of lost me halfway through the season for that one. But
the story was lacking a little bit in that one, but the action made up for it, I thought. But yeah,
no,
it
yeah, wasn't yeah, as good
as the it first was, season.
Yeah, I think because I just was like addicted to the first season that I kind of felt that way in the beginning of the second season, and then I still watched it, but I wasn't enjoying it quite as much.
Yeah.
I think I felt that Daredevil himself was one of the least interesting characters in his own series.
Yeah.
And I was more interested in everybody else. So I think that's why, I mean, I did enjoy the first series, but I wasn't too invested to go and keep watching it after, just because some of the people I was interested in weren't going to be in it anymore.
Yeah. I think, honestly, Daredevil, one of the things I love most is the choreography. Like, it is like masterfully done with action sequences. And cinematography in said action sequences are really on point. But yeah, never liked Daredevil anyway.
Got that whole zero cut scene where he fights and he never stops.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And they did the same thing in season two, but in the stairwell. Like or they did it again with Punisher in the prison, you know. They do it a lot, but it's, you know, those are the moments that I like, oh yeah, this is it. Okay, cool. So I'm glad I'm not the jerk who just has to bash on Jessica Jones, alone. So,
I thought that was really bad.
I'm glad there's a consensus.
We're all just neutral basically on it.
All right. Well, let's not bash anymore. If it's your thing, check it out. It definitely feels a lot like season one. I think a little bit better. If you like the first season, you'll probably like this one even more. And there's a lot more Patsy in this, if you like her. And she's a decent character, I think, as well. All right. Well, here, let's talk Gotham. I think we're two episodes into this, you know, since they came back from winter break. And man, it is getting intense. Have you guys seen it yet, the last few episodes?
I watched the two that you said to watch, but I haven't seen the series up till that point.
Okay.
I stopped. Well, I was watching Gotham, and then I just didn't pick it up again this time round. So I've jumped into the middle of this series. And yeah, there was a lot going on in those episodes. I am kind of curious to go back and watch the start of the series and see exactly how it got to this point, because it feels like there's just like a domino effect going on. There's just kind of more and more stuff building up that I'm not even sure exactly where it's going to go to.
Yeah, I feel a little bit of the same way, and I have been watching. Just as a recap, basically, they kind of showed a little bit, but Bruce has been on like his billionaire, like brat playboy thing. You know, he fired Alfred and just been partying and drinking because, you know, he can. He's a billionaire. So I rather like that, but we're definitely seeing a more progression with him. Allie, had you caught any of it yet?
I've seen like the first half of the season. I can't remember where I left off.
Okay.
But I do know, like, from promos and stuff like that, that what's his name? The Joker type, Jerome. The Joker character, Jerome. Yeah. I'm kind of interested to start watching again just because I know that they brought him back, and but he's not. It's funny to me because they keep saying he's not the real Joker.
Yeah.
And that. Yeah. So I wonder. Well, I guess what is he like? He's just
so
like a pre-Joker. Like what? I don't understand.
Basically, the way they explained him, and you know, it might change. But the way they explained mm-hmm. him like a year ago was, what was I saying? Oh, the way they explained him was he was the inspiration for the Joker, which I'm not a total fan of that idea.
Okay, that's what I was wondering.
Yeah, but it's cool to see like baby Joker running around.
Right.
It's pretty cool.
Right.
But anyways, yeah, Jerome, he's been one of my favorite additions to this series. I remember when they first showed him in, like, I don't know, season one or two, he was just like a normal kid. And there's this break when he becomes the Joker. And, like, it's one of my favorite Joker scenes of all time in the interrogation room with Gordon. Or Joker-ish scene, since he's maybe not the official Joker. But I just absolutely love that scene and that kid who plays him. It's very, very fun and well done. And, I mean, he's about as Joker as we're going to get on TV. I can't say no to more Joker. And everyone's kind of progressing. We see Ivy has, you know, they keep recasting her. And they keep finding ways to explain why she has a new body. But, yeah, now she's very much the Poison Ivy that we've seen in the comics. And Batman has a vision of, or sorry, Bruce has a vision of Batman. So it's wild. So, Bex, you know, just seeing that little snippet, like, what is your take on what's going on and all this craziness?
It feels like they're trying to get a lot of stuff in these episodes. And I think that at the moment it's working, but that's something that's probably going to have to be watched to make sure the balance doesn't go too far either way. I do still feel with Gotham, and I think it's the thing that holds me back from, you know, thinking it's a great series the most, is that originally the rumors were that Gotham was actually not going to be about Bruce and Batman. It was just going to be following Gordon and that side, and Bruce was only going to be a really minor character. And then they kind of flip that, and then now it's become about him becoming Batman, and that just gets Smallville syndrome to me. And I do really wish that they had not centered it around him, because I think that would have worked a lot better. I think they were just worried the ratings wouldn't be as high without, you know, a clear Batman arc to put on it. But I do feel that he's a good actor, but I do feel like that character is the one I'm interested in the least. I'm much more interested in Penguin, in Jerome, in everybody else that's kind of like getting a bit of spotlight. It's interesting to see what they're doing with Ivy and how really like incredibly comic book that is, because they tried to make Selena's just so much more kind of made more kind of realistic and believable and grounded in reality. And then they've kind of said, like, let's actually call her Ivy for some random reason rather than Pamela. And then let's just put her in a cocoon and then turn her completely into a comic book character who can do all sorts of things for like no apparent reason. She's not got a history as a botanist, a scientist, anything that gives any explanation as to why on earth she can suddenly do these things within like 20 minutes of an episode. It's enjoyable and it's fun, but like the show sometimes seems to act like it wants me to take it seriously, and then other times does things where I can't. So I'm not quite sure where I stand on it, but it seems to be getting pretty entertaining again. I'll give it that.
Yeah, it is definitely entertaining, and like I feel Gordon definitely is the main character of the show. I think Bruce, you know, you getting a snippet and seeing so much Bruce, I definitely get your point. But like in the series in general, Bruce is definitely secondary. Like he has little arcs here and there where he's like heavily featured. But for the most part, it is definitely 100% Gordon's show. and all the villains more than Bruce. But with that said, like, I feel like once they had that idea of Gotham and it developed into, like, we just want to see more comic book characters that we know. And then, that forces us to see more Bruce Wayne. And now with the Pamela Ivey stuff, like, we set up this world that we weren't intending to go this way. And now it is, like, now we just have to make stuff up as we go along because we didn't, you know, it didn't make sense. You know, the dots don't connect, so we have to make them connect.
It's such a mashup. The comic book lore and things, it's just so ridiculously mashed up into its own new entity that I don't think has a huge amount of consistency within its own timeline, unless I've missed, half a series, but it seems to really jump around with what it's doing. But if it's just going for entertainment, then I can't entirely fault that. I know a lot of people that watch it just to trash on it, just because they hate it.
Wow, that's interesting.
That's definitely, I've heard that a lot over here, is that people watch it just so they can get together and then just all have a massive session where they just basically just say all the things that's wrong with it and how much they hate it, and then they just call it hate watching. Which I don't quite get, but it seems to have got an additional fan base of people who watch it for that reason alone.
I did that when Empire came out, because that show is not good, and everyone tried to tell me it was, and it's not.
That's funny, because a lot of people have told me, oh, you have to watch it, it's so good. I haven't, but it seems to be a popular show.
Oh, Empire? Yeah.
Yeah.
The music is phenomenal. It's so well done. It's so well shot. But it's just the story's trash and the characters are trash. Unless it's changed. I watched the first season and a half. And then everyone kind of started realizing, oh, this show doesn't have legs. And I'm like, yeah, I told you guys. But anyway. But it's funny that you mentioned the Smallville thing. Because Smallville started out as a Batman idea. It was supposed to be a show called Bruce Wayne. Way back when. And then someone pitched the idea for Year One, and then it turned into, let's turn that into Smallville, and then we'll make Batman Begins. And so that's kind of where it diverged. But yeah, originally, the showrunners, it was originally an idea for a Bruce Wayne show, and just developed into something else. Which we got a great show on Smallville, and we got Batman Begins, which, you know, sparked the Dark Knight trilogy. So everything worked out, but yeah, it definitely is in the same roots. Which I think Batman has a bit of a more interesting pre-story than Superman. But we're not there yet. Like, he's still a kid. Like, he's not Batman for another 10 years. So
yeah, it all feels a bit sped up because Ra's al Ghul turning up they just seem to be kind of like, they speed up bits of timelines and they slow it down a bit, and then they mash in some characters that probably shouldn't be born at the time when the thing's happening. And I am interested to watch more of it, though.
good. I love it. And we got to see Batman for the first time, which was like the coolest thing ever. Just to see, like, he basically gets like high on some poison ivy stuff Not on purpose. He starts seeing a vision, and, you know, it's the Batman shadow figure. You don't actually see him. You just see, like, his silhouette. And, you know, he's, like, telling him, he takes him to where his parents died. And he's like,
oh, man.
He's like, this is where my parents died. He's like, no, this is where I was born. And I was like, oh, man. You know, so.
Yeah.
As a
fan.
But he
does it in the dark, husky voice as well. He doesn't, And it's the fact that Bruce is like, hey, you're me. And he's like, here's who I am. He's just like, this is a... I thought that was a bit cheesy. And I was just kind of like, okay, we've got a shadowy figure in a balaclava. And I was kind of like, I don't want the show to go this way. So that was probably my least favorite bit of the episode, was this is going to be about waiting a whole season to see someone put a suit on.
No, unless they changed their mind. They said last season, we will never see Bruce in a bat suit until the final moment of the show.
Okay.
So like
Smallville.
Yeah, like Smallville. So that,
yeah,
so
super
that will be,
Smallville stuff.
That will be the end of it. Until then, you know, they're just gonna tease us. Like, he's gone out and fought crime in like a suit. But it's like it's just like a clandestine type suit. You know, secret agent type
his
suit.
His jacket and
Mm-hmm. So it's a fun show. And until I get my Batman proper TV show, this is what I have to deal with.
We've got Batman Ninja that's coming out, and another Assault on Arkham style Suicide Squad animated one's coming out as well.
I can't wait for those. Both, especially the Ninja one. That one looks super cool.
That comes out on my birthday, so they clearly that was entirely animated for my benefit.
Definitely, of course. When does that come out?
May the 8th.
May 8th. Okay, all right. Super close. All right, well, let's wrap it up here with Person of Interest. This is Jonathan Nolan's show, one of my favorite people in the film world. Chris Nolan's little brother, who, just a quick backstory on him, he's 10 years younger than Chris and was raised in America. Chris raised in Britain, so they're like totally different people. They're like, you know, he's not like little Chris. He's just a totally different guy. They just happen to be brothers. And I think he's one of the brilliant minds behind most of Nolan's movies, because, you know, he has a lot of story buys and writing credits. So I think he has a fantastic amount of talent. So with that said, Bex, tell me about a Person of Interest.
It's an interesting one because when I first started watching it, I thought it was going to be just kind of rubbish and throwaway, because it starts off and the show tricks you into thinking you're watching kind of a procedural crime thing. Every week they get a number from a mysterious machine, and then that person's either the perpetrator of a crime or a victim, and they have to figure that out and save or get them arrested as they deem fit with their ever-growing little team of misfits, for lack of a better word. But the show is actually completely and utterly science fiction, and it evolves way beyond that beginning and becomes about the people on the side of an self-aware artificial intelligence. And then they start introducing other artificial intelligences and big government secrets. And it works really well as being believable, and it is science fiction, but it's set now.
Okay.
And it's one of those shows that you watch the first, like, I don't know, even like 6-7 episodes, and you're like, this is entertaining, but I'm not quite sure why I should be watching this. And then it's like someone said, okay, we've been playing the safe game long enough. We've got a few seasons agreed with the channels. Now we can just go for it. And it just escalates into this wonderful overarching plot that just, I didn't see it coming. And it became one of my favorite shows at the time to watch.
I'm okay. Now you've totally sold me on this show, because I watched the first 6 or 7 episodes because I loved Nolan or Jonathan Nolan, and I didn't catch it live, and there was nowhere to watch the seasons. So once it finally ended up on Netflix, I'm like, all right, I got to start from the beginning. I'm that type of guy. So I watched like the first 6 or 7 episodes. I'm like, this is a fun show. This is a cool idea. It's good writing. You know, I like this. But I thought the same thing. Why, like, it's just kind of, it's procedural. I'm not big on procedural shows. Like, I love SVU, one of the greatest shows ever. But I don't watch it because it's, you know, it's only, you know, it's kind of, there's no arcs, you know, for the most part. So now I'm really excited. I love shows that start procedural and turn into something else.
It completely just, it has that element of these numbers coming through, but once you know that what's giving you the numbers is actually this self-aware thing, and there's a whole backstory of how the AI got built, how it's surviving, how it's integrated itself into the city, how it's getting its information, like, it's a character in its own way, that has a massive influence on what's going on, and it becomes something that's so much more science fiction as it goes on. And then a little while later, they introduce a couple of more characters. Amy Acker, who's a wonderful actress, and Sarah Shuri as Shaw and Root. And Root especially is incredibly interesting, because whereas they see this machine as an AI that's got its own agenda and they're not quite sure what they think of it, Root's character, who names herself Root because she believes she belongs within the core of its thing, says, well, what if we've just built God? I'm just going to do what it says.
Dang.
So she just says, like, well, I'm just going to listen to it. And they do some really interesting things with that idea, because she's quite unhinged, and she puts all of her faith into this machine and just says, we've built a God, I'm going to follow her anywhere.
Wow. That's how, geez, that show goes some crazy places.
Yeah, you've just got to get through that first part. And to be honest, if one of my mates wasn't watching it and it was just on, like, in the house, I probably would have done exactly what you did and gone, this is just procedure, I can watch it any time. But then as it goes on, it gets more and more single plot line until by the end, it's just this big kind of culmination of crazy stuff that you would never imagine from seeing the first couple of episodes.
Yeah, yeah. I'll have to jump in once I finish my current shows. Maybe over summer once everything dies down. But yeah. And the cast is phenomenal. Jim Caviezel, and I forget the other guy's name, but he plays Ben from The Lost, and he's also the Joker in The Dark Knight Returns. So I like that guy a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. They all develop. They all change. The characters grow and evolve a lot from that kind of sort of fairly static appearance they have, where they seem a little bit cut out at the beginning. They've all got depth to them. It's a really, really well written.
Okay, all right. I knew it would be. And maybe that was part of the reason why I stopped, was because I was just, it didn't feel quite right. And I guess they were just building up for something more. So, like, around season two is when it gets crazy, or just late in season one?
It starts to just slowly, progressively kind of change. I think they were almost sneaking it past the people signing it off. They just started to work these kind of ideas in. Because it does feel very much like they sold, you know, at least most of the first series on, yeah, this is a nice safe bet for your TV channel. Definitely. Look, we've got a nice formula and these characters that fit these archetypes. And they're like, they've stopped looking now. Let's just slowly throw all of that out the window.
That's great. That's great. Yeah. Well, hey, I like when they do that. I personally think studio heads and execs are some of the worst things in the business, because most of them aren't creatives. So I don't know why you have a say over creatives. That's one thing that always bugs me. Like John Peters, like, he's, people like him just really bug me. I'm glad they were able to make something creative. All right. Any last thoughts before we wrap up here?
No, I don't think so.
All right. Well, we covered quite a range of things here. But thank you for listening. Also, just a real quick few things. Stephen Hawking died, I always looked up to Stephen Hawking. So that's a very sad thing. And also, Kevin Smith. I'm a big fan of Kevin Smith. He had a heart attack during a podcast, I think, or like in between two podcasts.
He said not going to the second podcast was what saved him, is what he said on his Twitter. Yeah.
Wow.
So, that's very sad. But he seems to be doing a lot better. So I'm definitely happy for that. Hopefully he stays healthy. All the big guys were getting hurt because Rick Ross had a heart attack. It just made me sad, all the big guys, you know, going through it.
Yeah, especially after trying to be healthy. He wasn't doing so well. I know. I told my husband the same thing. I felt bad. I was like, he's, you know, trying to change his lifestyle and, you know, be healthier and stuff like that. And then this happens to him.
Yeah. Super sad. So, take care of yourselves. That's the takeaway from this. Or even Stephen Hawking, like, he had a terrible disease and lasted way longer than he was supposed to. So, just take care of yourself. And keep reading and watching these great things, because life sucks sometimes, but these things make it better. So, all right, we'll check you guys out next time.